Balance your trading strategy by adding futures. CME Group helps you manage risk and capture opportunities in all market environments. Capitalize on around-the-clock access to highly liquid global futures and options market across all major asset classes. Just visit your online broker and get started. Plug into valuable educational materials and trading tools and see what adding futures can do for you at cmegroup.com/onthetape.
Clock on the East Coast, May 3rd. As I mentioned, Friday. Not often you see Dan and I on a Friday, but you know what? Who knows? That might become the norm soon enough. We shall see. But this is Market Call for this Friday. Letter K for May. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing okay, Guy. You and I spent a lot of time together the last couple of days. I think a lot of our faithful viewers know that we're down in Miami. We're at the FactSet Focus Conference. We did Market Call from the stage there. That was kind of fun. We did one live. We did them both live. We had Liz, one in front of a live studio audience, which we don't do that frequently. That was a lot of fun.
No, it was a lot of fun. I think people enjoyed it. I think our regular audience probably enjoyed it. Amanda and Jacob were down there in Miami helping us out. It was a good trip. I will tell you that, you know, we flew together and I, much to my chagrin, I carried my bag onto both flights there and back. And yesterday, before we get into the market, you know, I sat next to some lovely older lady with a service dog in her bag, which was fine. I mean, it's because I generally, you know, sleep on a plane anyway. But as Dan will tell you, I was all knotted up. Anyhow, that's neither here nor there. Let's take a look at the rundown. Amanda figured it's Friday, so she's going to tweak me a little bit. The all-important jobs report. I just love that. Yeah. Apple jumps on earnings. Did they jump on earnings or was something else, Dan Nathan? Ooh. We will discuss. And weight loss and travel stocks on our radar screen. So let's get into it right now, because obviously, you know, the jobs report did come out. It was a tad soft. I think the interpretation of that sent yields lower. We'll look at all those things. You know, we'll see. You know, but it's funny how so many people are discounting, and actually forget about discounting, the fact that there's a certain absurdity about talking about stagflation when you clearly have the slowing growth, the stag part of the equation, and you clearly have the inflation part of the equation in the form of sticky inflation. Yeah, maybe not to levels that we've seen historically, but still levels that are disappointing and disconcerting to, I think, the Federal Reserve. The last piece of that puzzle is obviously employment. Now, this was not a disastrous report by any stretch, despite what former President Trump said this morning in that presser after or before he went to court. He talked about how disastrous the number was. It's not disastrous, but it's starting to trend, I think, the wrong way for the economy, but maybe the right way for the Fed, which is why the market's probably rallying today, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I think making sense of it, Guy, is really hard if you think about it. And you've used this expression on many occasions that, you know, if the Fed is going to be tied to a lot of this data, you know, week to week or whatever, they're going to twist themselves into a pretzel figuring out what makes their job easier, right? In service of maintaining their dual mandate, right? So stable prices and full employment. And so, you know, if anything, the inflation speaks to the instability of prices that we've had over the last few years or so. And again, you know, like one of the things that I think is really interesting, you know, I have not lived at least as a market participant in times where inflation was much of an issue. And we go back to, you know, those pre-pandemic times, at least the way that inflation was measured, that market participants were focused on, you know, the Fed was dying to get their inflation, you know, inflation up to their 2% target. And now obviously they've been very focused on getting it down to a 2% target. But to your point that a lot of this stuff has become entrenched. Fed Chair Powell has said it again and again over the last few years since they acknowledged that, you know, inflation was not transitory any longer. This was in late 2021, that they don't really know what they need to have happen, right? Because you say careful what you wish for. If we were printing, you know, 300,000 on the monthly jobs reports and all of a sudden 175 is disaster, well, what is 100 going to be? What is it going to turn like? How quickly will it go negative? negative, how quickly will the unemployment rate that has been below 4% and at 50, 60 year lows, whatever it's been, how quickly will that start to get elevated? And what, how might we see consumer spending fall off? And we spent some time talking a little bit about that consumer number. Listen, I'm not in the camp where, you know, I want to see a precipitous slowdown, you know what I mean, that will give the Fed the green light to start lowering interest rates. Like, to me, that doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. So I think in a lot of ways, you know, and you've acknowledged this too, Guy, and I'll shut up for a second here, but Fed Chair Powell, since he took over the job in 2000 and what, early 17 or so, has been inclined to normalize interest rates whenever he's had the opportunity to do so. For the most part, that has meant raising back in 17 and 18, but he's gotten a bit whipsawed, or, you know, by a whole host of events that are out of his control, but every so often by the stock market too. You know what I mean? Yeah. So to me, if you interpret everything that we've learned this week from the Fed, data, earnings, you know, what's going on geopolitically, that means that the stock market should get back on its horse and get back to new highs. That doesn't make sense to me.
No, nor does it. And, you know, it's funny. We talk on television almost every night, for better or for worse. I'm sure a lot of people wish that was not the case, but it is. And, you know, words come back to haunt you. And we don't really run from anything. And we embrace the things we get wrong. But let's put up this slide, because I'm telling you right now, whatever the hell today is, May 3rd, whenever he said this, I guess it was May 1st, I don't see the stag or the flation. Okay, yeah. You know what? That's clever. Good for him. I'm sure he had some speechwriter, you know, come up with that one. I'm here to tell you, and, you know, you put a bookmark on this one. If I'm wrong, I'll say it. But this is going to come back to bite him in the ass, because I think most people that are actually paying attention see both. So it's clever and it's cute and I get it. And it's, you know, it makes for some fun commentary on TV, but there's nothing funny about it for a lot of people that are struggling with both. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And again, I'm not a hater at all, but, you know, I think there's certain jobs that lend themselves to a level of seriousness that I think you have to, you know, our job, fortunately, is probably not one of them in terms of what we do at 5 o'clock, at least, you know, we try to have a little bit of fun with it. But there's certain seats that require certain decorum. And when you start trying to get too cute is when you get yourself in trouble. But the next thing that, again, sort of makes sense are 10-year yields. And let's take a look at this. I mean, we were obviously north of 4.7%, and now you're seeing the move today. So do we get back to that moving average? Yeah, I think Carter Worth would say probably yeah. I mean, you could probably see, if you look, your eyes can see that uptrend that is still in place from, I don't know, January, February of this year type of thing. So, you know, we'll see what happens. The data suggests today, obviously, that yields should be lower, not because inflation is taming, because, again, maybe things are slowing. And today it was found itself in the form of the job market, Dan.
Yeah. And again, to your point about that, look, Amanda just did that. She is so good.
I knew it. I knew she could. I mean,
being at FactSet this week, you know, she got probably more kudos than you and I did, because we were on the stage a bunch in front of a lot of FactSetters and a lot of FactSet users. And as we were talking like this, and you guys see it every day when we're doing market call, she's really good on that stuff. So it is interesting. You know, people ask, why do you guys focus so much on the charts? And they kind of work. I mean, you know what I mean? So, like, you know, your point would be, if they close below that uptrend that's been in place from, you know, that early February low, then that moving average is probably the next nut likely spot, if you will. And again, you know, that's the thing, Guy, is that, you know, Carter says this and he does a great job. And I think he's back with us on Monday, or Tuesday, on market call. He's like, back in September, when we were kind of, you know, pressing up against that 5% level, it's like the narrative was higher for longer. Well, what happened? It went from 5 to 3.8 or so percent. Here we are. We've had this nice, you know, kind of stair step function of move higher from those levels. You see, we've held those uptrends. And if we break this uptrend, you know, where might we go? Guy, do we get back to that kind of March low that was 4.11 or something like, you know what I mean? Like, and then you tell me, if stocks, you know, where should they be? Do we get back to 5,400 in the S&P 500? If that's the case, you know, so, like, you know, to me, a lot of this stuff makes sense if you're just looking at normal correlations of these risk assets. You know what I mean? But, you know, the other thing I'll just say this is that you mentioned, I think you mentioned oil. So with yields down, we've seen the dollar down a little bit. We've seen oil below 80. We've seen Bitcoin get back going a little bit. Your gold, it's kind of stuck here, but it's, I think you'd probably say it's okay. You know what I'm saying? When the dollar was rallying and yields were rallying, we didn't see gold absolutely get destroyed. You know what I mean? Definitely came off those highs. So I don't know. Thoughts on that whole little pastiche that.
Yeah. Well, the gold, so we have a gold chart up. So if you go back sort of like mid-March into April, you'll see a similar formation in terms of, you know, made that high. Then you sort of spent the next couple of weeks sort of, you know, yeah, exactly. There's your cursor right there. And so we made the next move higher. And I think that's sort of, to a certain extent, what we're seeing now. The oil move, although I didn't think it was going to happen, I want to be crystal clear about that. You know, the oil move in retrospect sort of makes sense. As you start to see some of these ISM numbers, you start to see the jobs number, you know, you get the sense that things are slowing down, especially with that 1.6% GDP print. Again, I guess it makes sense that oil's going a bit lower here. You know, I'll stay the course and say I still think we're due for higher oil, but you can understand how that would be a contra call at this point. So all these things, again, when you think about them, to a certain extent, they make sense. The next slide showing Fed rate cut, the probability, I guess, again, this is a CME, I guess makes sense as well. You know, we were sort of pushed out, and then with today's or maybe the last few data points coming in, seemingly suggesting that maybe that rate cuts, again, 6 rate cuts expected last year, down to 1 or 2, pushed out to December, now getting maybe pulled back into, I don't know, the fall or late summer type of thing. And listen, it makes sense in terms of the market being a discounting mechanism and trying to figure out all these things. So there you go. I mean, that's what's happening today in a nutshell.
When I look at the distribution of potential for cuts, as we think about these next meetings, you know, obviously it's that November meeting, which comes right after the election. That's probably the one that people are most focused on. If you were to get one earlier, you know, you go from a July 31st meeting to September 18th guy, and then you don't have one until after the election. Mm-hmm. You would have to have a flat out disaster for the Fed to be cutting interest rates right into that election. And you've made this point on many occasions. Like if you had a surprise, let's call it 50 basis point cut by the Fed because of some of the stag sort of issues, or there was some sort of event outside of the control where the Fed usually just goes to an easier monetary policy, I'm not convinced, you're not convinced that that would be a great thing for stocks at that point too, because there's probably something going on in the economy.
Yeah, well, that would be because something clearly happened, you know, and or, you know, the market is pricing it in some sort of flight to safety in the aftermath of something that, you know, obviously we're not going to be able to predict happening. Let's take a look at the S&P chart because, you know, again, that too, we've talked about this seemingly forever, but that moving average is, you know, still daunting, you know, still down there, 4750. The last time we even had a conversation about that touching those levels was basically in Thanksgiving of last year. You know, we're 40% through the year, let's just say, and we haven't gotten close. So the longer we go without touching it, again, the longer you have, we're over 300 days now, I think, without a 2% closing low in a day. I mean, all these things to me just sort of, with each passing day, to me, it just gets a little more worrisome. I understand people say, and I'm not going to use the term, how things are working out in the best possible scenario. I know Dom Chu put out a tweet earlier today. Yeah, I just
wait. Best possible scenario, is that Goldilocks? Is that what you were going to get to, or no? Listen, you know, I look at this, the S&P. This is the future chart here,
but it's not a term you've ever heard me use.
I know. But you know that 4750. You see that level, the breakout level. What's interesting when you go back to December, we've highlighted this on many occasions. That breakout level after that consolidation just below, I think it was like 4650 or something like that. You know, it was after the Fed presser when, you know, like folks were pricing in 6 cuts in 2024 and cuts for the right reasons or so. And, you know, I want to go back to, let's throw up the crude chart, because, you know, Amanda drew that uptrend that we saw on yields. Okay. You can draw an uptrend on this. We're stopped right at that uptrend guy from December. Let's go to the dollar, the US dollar index. Okay. You want to draw a line from, you know, that low.
Same in type January. Of thing.
Yep. Same thing. So the technicals are suggesting that we pulled back to levels in all of these key risk assets where they should have found support. Let's see if they break through, because if oil goes lower, the dollar goes lower, and yields go lower. Now let's go back to that S&P 500. Guy, you might have the answer why we've never whiffed that 200-day moving average, okay? Like, why we never got really oversold. You know, like, yeah, maybe 2 weeks ago, we got a little oversold when the S&P was down like 5% or something like that. But if all of those other things are going lower and they break support, it would suggest that the under normal situations that the S&P should go back and retest those
prior. Makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. Without question. And maybe it is just a back and fill in those, you know, in those charts, back and fill over an overbought condition. Obviously, the S&P is maybe bouncing on an oversold condition, but both make sense. Bitcoin's another one that I guess sort of makes sense. You know, rallying again, you know, I've talked about this dozens of times. You know, Bitcoin to me is an overlay of what the Fed's going to do. And as people got more encouraged that maybe you'd see rate cuts earlier this year than anticipated, you saw a commensurate move to the upside in Bitcoin, which makes sense to me. And again, maybe this is bouncing on an oversold condition. So all of these things that we're talking about are seemingly taking place. You know, whatever was overbought is getting sold off. Whatever was oversold is getting bought up, and things are starting to revert to the mean. And then next week, do we start to get back to, you know, the trajectories and all of these things that were in place for the last couple of weeks? I mean, that's the rub right there.
Yeah, no, and I guess, you know, another thing that was oversold was Apple. We previewed it a couple of times this week, reported earnings last night. And again, we covered it on Fast Money, and you guys have probably all read a whole heck of a lot about it. We're just not going to get into too much of the detail. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, as far as the quarter and the guidance, they just weren't as bad as feared. And I have a lot of questions about what they're suggesting, or at least the commentary from the call in and around China. Tim Cook is suggesting you got to look past this 90-day cycle. I just don't see a lot that's particularly interesting. I also think it's interesting that, you know, until that headline came out, Guy, about the $110 billion buyback, you know, the stock was up just a little bit. And again, you would have expected that given low expectations and how the stock has acted. But, you know, the first comment that we made on Fast Money as all this news would just kind of got done hitting the wires here was that $110 billion without a specified amount of time in which they're going to do it. Now, this company has been known to do accelerated buybacks, meaning they go in the market and they buy pretty aggressively. And they detail that after the fact, by the way. So maybe the assumption is that, you know, they're going to get in there and buy tens of billions of dollars as the stock has, you know, languished and underperformed. But the company on average over the last 2 years has been buying about $18 billion in stock a quarter. And then our friend Karen Feinerman on the call made it before you were going to get to it, is that, okay, if this company is earning and they're guiding to low single digits earnings growth and they're retiring shares with cash that could be earning 5% or so, it's not accretive for them to do that unless they think that the shares are really cheap and go higher. Let's hear what you have to say about whether the shares are really cheap or not.
Well, I think, you know, from what I've learned over the last 17 years, seemingly, you know, almost every CEO will publicly say his or her stock is too cheap. So I'm sure there's a faction there that believes it as well. But when you look at the math, just math, that suggests otherwise in terms of Apple. I don't think there's anything cheap about it. And we've said it a bunch of times, but it's worth saying again. You know, I would say 7 or 8 years ago, maybe even longer at this point, because time goes by very quickly. You know, when Apple was trading at a low teens multiple of to earnings, like 12, 13, 14, and it was for a long period of time. I mean, it was trading at a trough multiple when it was a growth company, and it didn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense at that point, especially when you took into consideration the amount of cash on their balance sheet. Now that it is a value company, and I think, you know, we can debate whether or not that's the case. Clearly, it's not a growth company anymore. it's trading at a growth company valuation. At least in my opinion, it is. So there's something a bit amiss here. I mean, again, given today's move, it's probably trading, Dan, you have it in front of you, 25 and a half times next year's numbers-ish. Again, assuming that those numbers are going to come in, you know, with, and this is not me talking, this is Tim Cook, you know, mid-single digit earnings, mid-single digit revenue growth. And now I think it's five out of the last six quarters, year over year, you've seen revenue declines. I think people will take some solace in the fact that margins, maybe see a slight uptick in margins, maybe. So that was a good thing. And the other thing that I mentioned last night is the fact that services, I think, on as a percentage of overall revenue, came in close to 26%, which I believe is a record. Yeah. So that's good. So there it is. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. But to your point, it was, and you can't convince me otherwise. You know, the headline of that $110 billion buyback, that to me is what gave a little juice to it. Whether justified or not, I'm not suggesting it should have. That's to me is what happened.
Oh, guy, the stock's up 7%. I mean, that is probably most of the gains, in my opinion, because I just don't know why you'd be buying it on the fundamentals right here. You know, expected EPS growth for fiscal year 2025. Okay, so we're midway through fiscal 2024. And we know that, again, you know, new iPhones don't get released until, you know, September, October, November, depending upon, you know, when they announce. They usually announce them in September. Sometimes they're shipping late September, October. So you won't really get a huge benefit for the full quarter. But 2025 consensus estimates expecting 9% EPS growth, which would be the highest in 3 years since the bounce back in 2021, with kind of mid-single digits revenue growth, flat-ish margins. Here's one thing we haven't talked about, Guy. They said they're going to be making significant investments in generative AI. Okay. So if that is to the tune, let's say, of tens of billions of dollars, which is what the, you know, the sorts of numbers that we've seen in and around some other these large platform companies, at some point you might see some margin pressure, especially if it's not something that is commensurate with a big upgrade cycle for their hardware products, but you could see some service revenue. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of how that all shakes out. And I just want to make one last point about the buyback. You know, Doug Kass hit us earlier today from Seabreeze and he writes this on Real Money. Apple earns 5.4% on short-term treasuries. That's 6 months on its cash. Apple PE is 30 times. Okay, that's current, about 26 times next, which means they earn only 3.3% on buybacks. So again, if you're doing this, you either know that the headline is going to be the sort of thing that juices your stock, or you think that your stock is cheap relative to what you know your product kind of footprint or you know, like blueprint is. And you think it's going to cause a big upgrade cycle the way they have seen, let's say, every 6 or so years as it relates to iPhone because of some new whiz bang sort of technology. But again, the jury's still out on that, guy.
Let's see what they say. What is it? June 10th, the Worldwide Developers Conference. I mean, it's interesting. You know, was this the ground? Was that specific announcement laying the groundwork for something you may or may not hear in a month or so? So, I'll just throw that out. I'm not a hater. I don't really care one way or another about Apple, but you know, I was wrong. I thought this was a stock that was probably trading sideways. I thought the quarter was going to disappoint. I thought the stock was probably going to trade down between 163 and 165. That didn't happen. So let's see how it plays out. The other one begins with an A that we've actually talked about for years is Amgen. And we had, I think, again, you know, I said it last night, the Michael Jordan of biotech analysts on our show. And
wait, really quickly. He is a sector specialist guy. He's not an analyst. I want to be very clear.
Okay.
Michael Jordan, you know, you always say this, you say sometimes, you know, we had Steph Matteau from the New York Ranger.
That was a good podcast.
It was a great podcast in your feed, on the tape podcast feed. And you said, I'm not being hyperbolic calling him a legend. Okay. That was Steph Matteau. I think you calling Jared Holtz the Michael Jordan of health. I think there's some hyperbolicness. I'm just saying, I like the guy. He's good. But Jordan-esque status guy, come on.
Fair enough. I mean, I was, you know, he was there, so I wanted to
get before we get into this, because we have a couple minutes. Did you stay up for the Knicks game last night?
Yeah, 100%.
Your main man, Brunson,
is pretty stud. Happy. You know what? Listen. As you can tell, you know, I'm wired a certain way, and there's a propensity for me to like certain people and have utter disdain for others. Okay. others that, you know, the cheerleading type, right? The ones that put out, oh, Goldilocks is here. All that shit that just makes me friggin' crazy.
Yeah.
The flip side of that coin are hockey players, because none of them are that way, number one. And two, people like Brunson, who's a effing stud. The guy, watch him play.
Yep.
Watch him play. And watch his press conferences after and his interviews. I mean, he's just a stone cold killer. I love everything about him. And that Nick team, by the way. Yep. So they went up big in the first quarter. I mean, really big in the first quarter. They were doing a number on the glass. Obviously, the Sixers came back and took the lead at home. Crowds involved in the game, blah, blah, blah. But the Knicks are a gritty friggin' team. I think, as a matter of fact, they say something like, all grit, no quit. And then something else that I found pretty cool, like, I don't know, whatever the hell it is.
You're fired up. And what you like
You know why I like the team? Because they don't take shit and they don't back down, which I love. Anyway. Yeah. So you brought it up, not me. And Amanda's like, please stop. I'm begging you. But
But like, listen, I'm with you on that. And I think that.
Tight knit. All grit, no quit, tight knit. There you go. I knew it was.
All right. Well, listen, both the Rangers and the Knicks are moving to the second round of the playoffs this weekend. So how about that? That's
got the exciting. Knicks. I don't know when the Knicks Pacers series starts. I know the Rangers series starts on Sunday. So you got. So, and they're at MSG. So Mondays, this is like a Dan Nathan special, except you won't be around. But Sunday, the Rangers play, and then Monday, the Knicks at the world's most famous.
I'll be very frank with you. As the playoffs go into, you know, these further rounds, the price point just gets insane.
Painful. Like,
it's not something that I can stomach, to be very frank with you. So it's not on my, I'm perfectly happy to watch it in a nice Irish pub here in here at home or something.
Irish. If you ever ask me, any of these people, you know, come watch the game with me, it's just not happening at a bar. As a matter of fact, at 60 years old, I could say without equivocation that I've never gone to an establishment to watch a game. It will not happen. I have zero interest in being around people. See that shot?
All right. I'm just going to cut you off. This says more about you as a human.
I agree.
You are a great human. Okay. But you're like kind of antisocial. And by the way, last Wednesday night, it was the night of, I think it must have been Knicks game 3. I was at dinner. We walked out of there. We went to a bar called Jake's Saloon. It was on 23rd and 6th Avenue. And, you know, I get a Bud Light in a bottle and my buddy gets a vodka, you know, Tito's Rocks, a little twist. And we're not even halfway through it. And the bartender brings over, the same thing. He said, that's from the owner over there, Jimmy. And he's a big Fast Money fan. So, you know, guy, like, you're one of these people. You love being out there with the people. I spent 2 days with you with hundreds of the people who knew you. And, you chatted them up and you were, like, super gracious and interested in everything they had to say. You can't go into an Irish pub in New York City when the Knicks game's on and enjoy that?
Okay. No, because I'm there to when I watch a game, I want to watch the game. I don't want to get in all the other things, the ancillary things that go on at these establishments. I have no interest in the small talk that's me. Okay. Well, I don't know what to tell you. I'm also not one of these people. And you see all these. And if you're one of these guys watching this right now, you might want to rethink this. If you're wearing, what do they call those things? Those vests.
I wear vests all the time, guy.
But you know, with the name of like your company on them, with the no sleeves.
Yeah.
And like seven of you go to get lunch and yuck it up, and then you go out. It's like the scene. It's very much like that scene in Boiler Room, if you recall, when all those dipshits go out together. You're just looking to get beat up by some asshole like me. Anyway, I don't know how we got on any of this, but let's
Jared Holt. Jared Holt is from Mizuho.
All right.
He is the pharma sector specialist. He's been coming on our show for a while. He's really good on these GLP-1 drugs. Amgen, as you mentioned, you've been talking about this name for an awful long time. Huge gap today. You see the headline, right? So they have a GLP-1 that is progressing, I guess, in FDA trials. This one is not going to be a weekly shot. It's maybe a quarterly or something like that. So you're getting a big move. You asked him, I thought, a really good question, guy, about valuation.
Every once in a while, it happens.
No, I didn't mean it.
I'm kidding.
But you asked him a great question on valuation. You said, why shouldn't, if this drug gets, you know, like starts moving along and it looks like it's the real deal. He said, they're already starting to manufacture the pens. Like that's one of the big bottlenecks for these sorts of things. And you said, couldn't this get to 20, 25 times, you know, or something like that. He pushed back a little bit. My question to him was, well, if Novo, you know, owns this space as Lilly does, it trades at 30 times, right? Like next year, and you're seeing a decelerating growth and lots of competition coming online, you should see some sort of multiple compression between some of the, and his point was, well, it's going to take a while to sort of ramp this up. So those companies, Novo and Lilly, didn't start getting those premiums until the drug was in the market.
100%. And that's why it really is an interesting conversation real quick, because Amgen, which has probably close to 24 major drugs. When I say major drugs, you know, drugs that will do $100 million or significantly more in revenues per quarter. I mean, it's one of the few companies that actually say that. Trades at about, even with today's move, it probably trades 14 and a half, 15 times next year's numbers. And my point in asking the question was, in a market that's seemingly rewarding a lot of companies before the fact, you know, it seems to me that if Amgen gets some sort of traction on this, a mid-20s, you know, 23 to 25 multiple is not insanity. And he said, you know, there's still a long runway, but we've also seen, you know, markets give the benefit of the doubt a lot of times to these companies. And, you know, that's trading, right? That's trying to interpret what's going to happen, what you think's going to happen, and so on. By the way, last time he came on a show, I think Amgen, as I mentioned last night, it was trading in the mid, I think 315 or so. And he thought it could do a bit of a back and fill. And yesterday, prior to this, you know, this was a stock that traded below 270. And he actually sort of thought that could happen. So I wanted to give him kudos about that. And that's where the Michael Jordan thing came out.
All right. Well, you know,
I'll say this. I haven't looked today. Maybe you can see it in front of you. What the volume in Amgen is. My sense is it's probably a big day. If we could do a non-static longer term chart, you know, these are levels where, you know, now it's got to start to prove itself, Amanda. So we'll see. So, you know, if it doesn't get through those prior highs we saw, you know, maybe now we got to do. There you go. Maybe we have a little bit of a problem. So you can see that prior high. You can see where we are now. So we'll see. I mean, let's put it this way. I don't think you have to go plowing into Amgen today. I do think you're going to get an opportunity at better levels, but we wanted to bring this one up.
Yeah. And, you know, let's pull up Eli Lilly, which had great results, great guidance, stock gapped up. It's interesting. It's filled in that gap guy in the last couple of days. You know, again, I think, you know, a competition story is going to be interesting. Mel, who obviously knows this space inside and out, that would be Melissa Lee.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. She did a fabulous documentary a couple months ago.
The Big Shot. Oh, Big Shot.
So she knows a lot about this space, but and she highlighted the fact that it's not, you know, yeah, there's going to be competition and injectables coming for Lilly and Novo, right, who own the space, but they're also in trials for lots of other uses for these drugs. This would be Lilly and Novo. They are going to defend their moats pretty significantly. But it is interesting that the stock has consolidated and it had a nice little gap, didn't make a new all-time high guy, and then filled in that gap. Let's pull up Novo for a second. And Novo, on a relative basis, has acted a bit worse than Eli Lilly.
It has been over the last couple months.
Yeah, but their guidance guide was not that great. Like they're talking about pricing pressure and the like. So if you have more competition coming on and you want to expand your market share, you're going to have to lower prices, which is going to put pressure on margins at a time where Novo has been making acquisitions to increase their their distribution and manufacturing and the like. And so to me, like, these stories might be done for a little bit, guy. There might be other ways, and we've been looking for different ways to kind of play this. Yeah. But as you get longer in the tooth, and it's not too different than the high-end GPU story for, you know, generative AI. There's been one clear winner. There's been very few that have been able in the semi space that have been able to kind of grasp a little bit of that pick, because they don't have the market share, and it's not different than GLP-1s.
You've made that point a couple times. I think it's correct. Pull up that Lilly chart real quick. I don't want to get bogged down here, but, you know, if you look at this price action, that specifically, so look at since February, you know, this has been, again, lower left, upper right. Then February, we obviously traded up to those levels, and we've basically been going sideways to slightly lower ever since. I mean, one of two things are going to happen here. Obviously, it's either building a somewhat a platform to take the next leg higher, or we sort of topped out in the long term and we're going to start to roll. And if we do roll, what do we get down to? And it's probably in the form of that moving average, which I think probably comes in, if I had to guess, by the time of decay, 650 or thereabouts. And you'd be like, you're out of your freaking mind. There's no way. Well, I am out of my mind, number one. Number two, there is a way, because if you go back and look at Eli Lilly over the last 5 years, you've actually seen moves of that magnitude a number of times before.
Yeah. Before we get out of here, I want to hit some stuff in the travel space, and then we'll quickly look.
We were just traveling. Oh, you mentioned that.
Yeah, we did. We did. So last night,
by the way, we had a nobody cares. I'm sorry, Amanda. I really am sorry. So we were supposed to yesterday, which was Thursday, we did our 8:15 pre-market, whatever. I don't know what it was.
It was like a version of market call, but it was 8:15 was live. It was not recorded. Right. It was for all the fact set people.
Okay. You're talking quickly. You want me to move on with this. I understand. So I'm going to quickly tell you what happened. So Dan, before we started, showed me his phone, and I'm not quite sure what he's showing me, but he's showing me that a flight we're supposed to be on was delayed. I'm like, oh, that sort of sucks. And then 10 minutes later, it's delayed even more. So Dan, quick on his feet, he's like, well, we got to sort of change gears here. So we were supposed to go from Miami to Newark, which is, you know, a stone's throw to the NASDAQ. I mean, a nine iron away. But we pivoted and we went to the Fort Lauderdale airport and flew into JFK. Now, if you're not from the area, it might not mean a big deal. JFK is at the ass end of the effing world. I mean, you might as well land on fucking Mars. And it took us about, 2 hours to get back?
Hour and a half. JFK.
Anyway, we made it back.
But by the way, it would have taken us an hour from Newark to get there.
No, patently false.
Okay, whatever.
Anyway, right. Sorry. So let's look at these travel stuff.
On the travel, and shout out to AD because she
killed it.
She changed the flight. It was amazing. So look at this. Expedia, this is a stock that I kind of want to like. You know, it's a company that I actually really like, and I use their service a lot and all that sort of stuff. I think it's a really cheap stock relative to expected growth, but, you know, not a great quarter on a bookings miss. You see it there from that Bloomberg, and they cut guidance. Yep. And, you know, it's kind of hard. Like, you know, you don't want to get bogged down staring at fact set estimates. You know what I mean? Like because they do move around, especially as companies give guidance, as their competitors, you know, kind of report and the like here. But bad break there. You can see, obviously, the stock in the fall was very oversold, got a little ahead of itself. So two consecutive big earnings gaps, guy. You know, like, so you have revenue and earnings estimates for this year and next that have come down from mid-20s to kind of either low 20s. They probably settle out about 20 for each of them. But, you know, the stock is, you know, it's really cheap, you know. So, it's a tough one. Decent balance.
Real quick, let's look at a longer-term Expedia chart, because the funny thing about this is the volatility in stock is staggering. I mean, moves, you've seen moves along the way. I mean, you know, you can look at it here and see. I mean, it can't figure it out as well. If you look back, this was a stock in 2021-ish, or maybe even late 2020. We're basically at the same price. But look at how we've got there. I mean, look at the moves to the upside and the downside, and we're right back where we started. So the market has a very tough time determining where the stock should be. On top of which, yesterday, you actually posed a question to me about exactly this. If you think some of the things are deteriorating, what does it mean to the travel? We actually talked about this, not that it helps anybody here, but at 8:15 yesterday down in Miami. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah, I just say this, okay? This company has now like a sub, you know, $18 billion enterprise value. Let's discount that EPS growth. Let's call it high teens, okay, from, you know, mid-20s. And, you know, high single digit expected revenue growth, 88% gross margins, a pretty good balance sheet. They have nearly $6 billion in cash, and they have, you know, a little over $7 billion in debt. You know, it's fine. So if this stock gets anywhere near to those fall levels, I think it's a buy. I mean, that's just my two cents. Booking, on the other hand, trading better on results that look pretty decent. Again, you'd say to yourself, well, aren't these companies pretty similar? They have some different exposures. Last one here, guy, Live Nation, which owns Ticketmaster, and I'm all loaded up. If you saw my
You are single-handed. You and Finnerman are single-handedly keeping this thing afloat.
Yeah. Well, and so this one, interesting though, you know, again, you'd say consumer discretionary and the like here. And, you know, it's got investigations and, you know, the government's all up there, you know what, everything like that. But good quarter, good guy. If they're ever going to do it, it's going to be this, because if you're going to concerts in the spring and the summer, you're going to, you know, all these events, you're buying them now and you're going to them later, that sort of thing. So again, I just thought that was really interesting. All right. Last thing before we get out of here, guy, earnings calendar for next week. We are not done. Palantir on Monday. That's one you always find interesting. Tuesday, Disney after the close. Oxy is a name you talk about a lot. Lyft also out there. And then Uber, I think it's Wednesday morning, and Airbnb, yeah, which I'm sure there's some things we can take away. Robinhood, which you mentioned last night, crypto coming back should be kind of interesting for Robinhood. And then also Shopify. The rest I don't really care about.
Yeah. You got Roadblocks on Thursday, which I always find to be really interesting. What do I take away from this? Well, you mentioned, why are you laughing?
I mean, because you could give to, you know what, it's about Roblox. I got asked a question last week. Do you remember that?
Courtney, it's like Randy, you build your gaming thing.
Yeah, it's a platform. Yeah, it's a platform. No, that's Unity is the platform. Roblox is actually a bunch of games that the kids use, but kids are all grown up, so they don't use the Roblox.
All right, so here you go. I'll be serious for 1 second. Tyson, very interesting. I mean, what's going on the food inflation front? You're going to learn something from Tyson without question. Uber and Lyft have become two entirely different companies, but why Uber is important, in my opinion, Amanda, real quick on the fly, pull up an IYT chart. Now I'm really going off script, but look at the double top in the IYT in the transportation index, which the top four holdings are all the U's: Uber, Union Pacific, UPS, and whatever other U that I can't think of.
United Airlines is
United Air. Thank you. So do a longer term chart. You'll see what I'm looking at here in the IYT. This is a little interesting. Thank you.
Wow.
Look at that, Dan Nathan. So we're at pretty big support levels. You see those prior highs. So the reason why I'm watching Uber so closely next week is not because of Uber necessarily, but what it could potentially mean to the transports. And then subsequently, what do the transports mean for everybody else?
Yeah. And I'll just say this is that, you know, DoorDash had not a great quarter, you know, that Uber Eats, maybe Uber Eats is taking share, who knows, but I think that's worth noting. Airbnb extrapolating maybe something from the Expedia owns the Vrbo, which is a competitor to Airbnb, not a part of the revenue. And then Disney, you know, after that Netflix subscriber number, which was big. I mean, like, you know, Netflix gapped down a lot, but that was a big beat. Let's see who that came, you know, whether it was very Netflix specific. We know that they're doing a lot of things in patch, you know, password capture and the like here. So Disney will be interesting Tuesday after the close. All right, guy, you and I on Monday are going to be in Los Angeles. We're going to be broadcasting the market call from there, from our friend Brent Montgomery's studio, Wheelhouse, in West
Wasn't
Hollywood.
He the guy that used, he was the CBS sports guy, right? That did the NFL right, today. Right,
no, that's Musburger, but that's fine. And then we are going to be at the Milken Conference on Monday, doing a little fast money. You're going to be coming back on Tuesday. I'm going to be out there all week. We really appreciate you guys being with us here on a Friday. Like guys said, who knows? Maybe Friday will become a thing. Have a great weekend. Enjoy watching your teams in the playoffs. Maybe the Yankees could put a couple wins together for you, guy. That would make you happy here. I know.
Early. I mean, again, fans, you know, Yankee fans don't get, Met fans get all excited. I guess Francisco Lindor was sick and he, you know, good for him. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you watch baseball at Shea, you get excited about things. Mr. and Mrs. Met and that bullshit, you know, hit the apple, win a steak. I mean, that's Bush League Met baseball. Yankee fans, you know, the cathedral that is Yankee Stadium. We obviously look forward to things in September and October. So I'm not getting all that crazy. And yes, and for you folks saying to yourself, my God, he's an arrogant sports fan. You're right.
All right. On that note, enjoy your New York sports this weekend. I know
don't wear the vest with your buddies. You look like a Johnson.
All right. I just wear mine solo. But I got you a vest. I went to the Masters a few weeks ago. I got you a vest with the little Masters symbol. Did you throw it out? Or did you give it to somebody? No. All right. Well, I'd like to see you wear it. All right, people. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Thanks to our fine sponsors. That would be CME Group and FactSet. Thanks to Guy Dami. You got them all spicy on a Friday afternoon. Thanks for being here all week with us. Check out the On the Tape podcast today. It dropped in the podcast store. Danny Moses had his Big Short friends, Vincent Daniel, Porter Collins, and then Guy and I had a conversation with the CEO of FactSet. That would be Phil Snow. That's on the backside of that. Enjoy. We'll see y'all on Monday.